And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, folks? Welcome to episode 56 of the Fanboy Garage. We're always happy to have you here. man, it's been an incredible summer, an incredible time at the box office. Let's get into what happened last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the box office this summer has really been the story of, like, the haves and the have-nots, right?
Seriously.
There hasn't really been a lot of middle ground. So, obviously, the big story coming out of this weekend is The Lion King, which repeated at number one. Now, it had a 60% drop here. Mm. It had a huge first week, so it's not crazy to think that it would have a bigger drop than that. But it still did $76.6 million. But the real story here is that at the time that we record this, which is Tuesday, July 30th, the movie has already hit $1 billion worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Which it has done in 19 days, which is very impressive. It's not, obviously not anywhere near a record or anything, but it's still in very rare company, and obviously it's still adding on to that. So who knows what that thing's going to ultimately end up doing?
Yeah, and I mean, just to put things into perspective, so a lot of Disney films at this point, I think it's four at the moment, are sitting pretty in the billion dollar club. Well, I can speak today. And Aladdin is one of those that just crossed the $1 billion mark as well. Yes. This past weekend. And it's been in theaters, what, since May?
Aladdin?
Yeah, is it May?
10 weeks.
So 10 weeks. Yeah. And look at that, Lion King hits it in 19 days.
Yeah.
So
we're going to talk more about Disney in a little bit. But They're on a nice run.
They're on a nice little hot streak.
They are.
Nice hot streak.
Yeah. Number two was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new Quentin Tarantino film. It did really well, $41 million opening weekend. The movie cost $90 million to make. So, that's a nice opening right there for them.
It's his best opener.
Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah.
Kudos to him, although it doesn't come without controversy. I was reading some news swirling around around this movie, specifically from Shannon Lee.
Yes, I saw that.
You saw that, the daughter of Bruce Lee, who is very, very upset about the portrayal of her father in the film. Was quoted as saying it's a caricature of who he really was as a person and as an individual, and sort of some of the liberties that were taken about his person, with his personality and who he was. So that's not really cool to see or hear. I mean, I'm a big Bruce Lee fan.
Yes.
And I was actually really excited to see him pop up in the trailer, but to hear that he's kind of like a joke of himself, it's not really cool.
I'm someone who's very well versed in Bruce Lee, having studied his martial art philosophy for many, many years. I've read his books. I've trained with some of his training partners. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
To find out that's something that's in this movie. I have to watch it for myself to see exactly how it is, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, we digress.
Yeah. Spider-Man Far From Home was third. $12.5 million, 41% drop. So that continues to just plow ahead. And, Toy Story 4, amazingly enough, only a 33% drop, did $10.5 million. The movie's over $920 million worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have a shot to get to a billion.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy because, we're going to talk about Disney in a little bit, but that's what they need is another billion-dollar movie. And then, as you mentioned, Aladdin, another just really strong hold, only a 26% drop, another $3 million. It's over $1 billion now worldwide. That's just pretty remarkable. And now on the have-nots side of the box office, just to follow up on one movie here, Dark Phoenix. And the only reason why I'm going to bring this up, because it's fairly irrelevant at this point, but the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's pretty much now you know, done. It's not really going to be tacking on any significant numbers. It's $252 million worldwide. And the reason why I mentioned that is because I think Nathan, on one of our episodes, he had asked if we thought that this thing was going to outgross the worldwide total of the very first X-Men movie, since this is now the last X-Men movie as far as this universe goes, and it's not going to. The first X-Men, which came out in 2000, in a very different climate for cinema,
right,
did $296 million worldwide. This movie in 2019 has $252 million worldwide in the bank, and
that
not
is
really significantly
crazy.
Adding to that. Yeah,
just I mean that movie was like one of the very first comic book movies out there. Didn't have any of the goodwill or any of the sort of cultural significance as the films that followed it. It was really a starting point. And you know, ultimately Dark Phoenix was meant to be a culmination of the, you know, the many, many years that this franchise has had in the sort of entertainment sphere, and it didn't even touch it. That's just crazy to me. It's crazy. Like it didn't resonate with the foreign box office and in international markets, and it certainly didn't resonate with folks here.
No, it did like 65 million domestic.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hard to imagine. That should have been like, you know, a bare bones opening weekend, like
low-end
opening weekend for that movie, you would think would be 65 million. But
I don't even know what to say about that number. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, Disney.
Yeah,
Disney now has 4 $1 billion plus movies so far this year,
mm-hmm,
and more coming.
Yeah, apparently. So, you know, we were just talking before we got on to do the show, and obviously Rise of Skywalker is on most of everyone's list, you know, that's listening to this show, but there's another little movie called Frozen 2 that drops in November that will certainly look to capitalize on that holiday season. And I will tell you, my little girl is super excited about it, as is, I'm sure, many of the other kids who fell in love with Let It Go and the first movie that came out a couple of years ago. So, yeah, I'm sure that Frozen 2 is just gonna clean house before Rise of Skywalker kind of closes the 2019.
Yeah, Frozen. Yeah. The first Frozen, just in case anyone wants to know, did $1.27 billion at the box office. Maybe you'll get to see the whole movie though this time.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know.
It's up in the air.
Trying to keep a 3-year-old sitting for 2 hours, not really.
Yeah.
It was the cutest thing, though, just to go back to my story last week about The Lion King. My daughter has watched the animated version of it. She's very, very upset when Mufasa dies. And she knew it was coming. Like, it was kind of crazy because it's not in a form that she's seen before. You know, it's a CGI film, all that stuff. And she was covering her face. And she was like, no, I don't like this part. I don't like this part. So obviously, you know, we've talked about it before, being beat for beat, you know, even little kids pick up on that stuff. And sure. And my daughter, and that was right at the point where she was like, yeah, I'm done. I can't see this anymore. There goes $30.
Sure. just so you know, the four movies are, in case you didn't know, are Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, The Lion King, and Aladdin. And, of course, like we mentioned, Toy Story 4 has a shot to get to a billion, so that could be 5. And then, you know, they could very well have $7 billion-plus movies
for
this
sure.
year. Which
yeah,
is
I mean, every expectation would be that Frozen 2 cleans house again, you know, makes a billion, and Rise of Skywalker, for sure.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm going to be very, very optimistic here and say that Rise of Skywalker will definitely do $1 billion. If it doesn't, I will hide. I will not be part of the show anymore. I will just become a hermit like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then maybe someone will do a movie about me.
Yeah, that would be nice. That you won't want to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that ping pong movie.
The ping pong movie?
Yeah, have you ever seen that? I forgot. Is it Balls of Fury or something like that?
Oh, got it. Yeah, I had no idea.
Isn't this like a ping pong movie, right?
Sure, yeah.
I don't know.
Speaking of terrible movies, you sent me a text the other day letting me know that you were rewatching Masters of the Universe.
God. Yeah. So here's the part of the show where we talk about things that we're watching and things that we probably shouldn't have picked back up and turned on again. I don't even remember what day this was. Was it Saturday, Sunday, something like that? Friday night. Bored out of my mind. I'm like, oh, Masters of the Universe, it's on Prime. Let me check it out. And I'm like, yeah, 10 minutes into this movie, you know, like Dolph Lundgren, as he's doing his like blaster in one hand, sword in the other, like didn't have his eyes open because he was like really anticipating the sparks to kind of like the special yeah. effects. So I didn't know what the hell he was doing. He was just kind of like moving his arm, and the cuts were horrible. And God, it's such a bad movie. Frank Langella, who's amazing in general, is like the only one dialed in, but he's not in, like, I don't
he's
know.
He's trying, but he's in a different movie. Yeah.
He's in a completely different movie. And the fact that he doesn't have lips became a distraction to me, because I'm like, how is he getting those words out? And I'm like, oh yeah, it's the post voice edits.
Yeah.
But that's such a bad movie, man. Yeah. And they actually use cartoon noises.
They did.
For some of the special effects.
Yeah. And nothing says He-Man like a blaster, by the way.
Seriously.
I mean, who doesn't think blaster when they think He-Man?
Right.
Yeah.
But I got to say, though, the makeup is pretty good, and I'd say ahead of its time.
Okay.
There's some really good stuff that the makeup was doing, but the movie itself is just total trash. Total trash. And then from that point, I was like, I'm just going to turn this off. I started watching The Last Samurai, which is – I forgot how beautiful that movie is and how amazing
that
is. Well,
especially after Masters of the Universe.
After the dumpster fire.
Yeah.
It was Masters of the Universe. But here's the thing. Kind of going back to Masters of the Universe. Like, back then, the movie was what, 87?
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever, late 80s. I mean, that was like, He-Man was all the rage.
Yes.
Like, we're coming off of... kind of stepping, he was kind of like in his prime, about to like go into retirement. And they're talking about redoing. I know David Goyer has been, you know, writing a script for the Masters of the Universe and all that other stuff. And I'm like, who's going to watch this movie now? Like, would kids know? Like, would you ask a 25-year-old if they knew who He-Man was? Like, would they know?
They might, yeah, because I think like He-Man as a concept, I think, is something that they might. Now, have they seen the cartoon?
Yeah,
probably not, but are they aware of like who He-Man is? Probably. Don't forget, there was a really good Masters of the Universe revival not that long ago on Cartoon Network.
That's right, I forgot about that one.
So, I mean, it's not like the brand has been dormant since the 80s. It hasn't, and, you know, they still have figures, and it's still part of pop culture, and I think most people are familiar with the character.
Right.
How excited modern audiences would be about the movie, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, how do you bring it to life without, I mean,
I think you could do a great job with it, and I would be excited for it. And I think if
that's because you know exactly who he
is. Yeah.
Like the whole Prince Adam thing.
Sure.
Like,
but if you sell the movie, though, if you know, some great trailers, and I mean, just, you know, you basically want to look at it as almost as if, you know, if you're somebody that's not familiar with the story at all, just look at it as like as if it's an original story, right?
Like a fantasy.
Right. If there was a movie that came out tomorrow that you knew nothing about, it was just created out of thin air. I mean, they would need to sell you on that concept, right? Regardless. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. I mean, they're not going to be able to rely solely on the brand name.
Yeah.
But because, I mean, even in 1987, with He-Man at the height of its popularity, and granted that we understand the movie was awful, but it didn't do well at the box office either. So even then, people weren't flocking to the theaters to see He-Man in live action. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it's just not a concept that people want to see. You know, it was a cartoon. It was an action figure line. It was a product of its time. Maybe sometimes things are better suited for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think...
although I still kind of would want to just... be oddly really nostalgic.
The concept of it as a cartoon, it totally makes sense to me, but like I'm thinking about today's films and like what everyone's really hot about now, and like the idea, the concept of like a dude who's like a normal guy uses a sword to transform into this like juice head guy with like a bowl cut.
That's your breakdown.
No, but I mean like the whole magic, like the whole magic thing. I don't think that's a thing anymore. I don't think people are really dialed into like,
it's very possible,
the magic and the sword thing. I think that's so 80s.
Oh, they just have to give him a blaster.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that was the thing. I think in looking at Masters of the Universe from the 80s, they went like total Star Wars. Like they went Star Wars slash like Crawl slash.
Well, they were all over the map, right? So they didn't know what they wanted to do. They clearly were not confident when they were making the film. You know, they didn't have the budget. It was a canon film, right? No, actually, it wasn't even canon, was it? Was it Orion? It was a failed.
I thought it was canon.
It might have been canon. It was a failed studio, anyway, one of them. And so they didn't have the budget, clearly, and they didn't have the guts or the money to set it all on Eternia.
Yeah.
So they basically give you a little bit of Eternia. Well, not even really. They give you a little bit of the castle, basically, Castle Grayskull, and then they go right to Earth.
I mean, dude, they spend so much money on this, like, costuming stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the soldiers are wearing Star Wars-esque type, like Darth Vader-esque, you know, armor. They have horrible actors. Like, they're getting hit with blaster bolts, and, like, 30 seconds later, they're like, oh, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Oh, God, this is really, really bad. Yeah. And they turn that little elf guy into, I don't know.
So you get, like, fish out of water stuff. Like, they didn't go with Orko. They went with this other character that was original for the movie. And it's just, I mean, it clearly was not a movie made with a lot of confidence. It was canon film. So, like, any canon film, it, you know, obviously it was made on the cheap to try to just use the brand name to recoup as much as possible. And, it is what it is. It's just one of those movies that if you came from that time period and you're someone who grew up with Masters of the Universe, you'll watch it as you did for whatever reason, just for the nostalgia purposes of it, and then realize how truly terrible it is, and then be like, yeah, I can't. I'm done.
Yeah, it had been a while. It had certainly been a while since I'd seen it. And you know, watching it again as an adult, I'm like, I wouldn't show this to a kid.
No, because it doesn't.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's bad. I don't know if kids today would find any value in it.
Oh my gosh. It's like I said, if you just want to see Dolph Lundgren close his eyes and swing his arm around trying to block, you know, fake blaster bolts, that's the movie for you. And amazing makeup. I got to figure out who did the makeup, because like Beastman looks like Beastman. It's like legit, like the toy. And then they threw in some other characters and know nothing about because they're not real. They just kind of make them up and like throw them in.
Well, they do have some. I mean, like Evil Lynn is in it.
Yeah, but I'm like
Man at Arms is in it.
His costume looks dope.
Yeah.
And he's probably like the best written character. And he's got really nothing to say.
Sure. That's why he's the best written character. They didn't have time to give him terrible dialogue.
Like, you look like the action figure. Your costume's great. Like, yeah. Just don't talk much.
He-Man has a cape for some reason.
Yeah, what? I mean, so figure what? That out.
It's like, I get it. Like, look, if you don't want to necessarily capture the look of the figures or the cartoon, that's one thing. But, like, why do you got to add a cape?
Yeah, we'll throw a blaster in one hand, and maybe they were trying to spin off into another toy line or something like that. I'm sure that probably happened.
Although they did just release, I think, they released really cool figures from.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
Yeah. No, but that's for their legacy of the cartoon versions, but they released figures of the movie characters.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they look really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I get myself a mullet He-Man. That'll be cool.
With a cape and a blaster.
With a cape. Yeah. Dope.
The logo was right, though. They got that right.
Yeah.
That was the actual Masters of the Universe logo.
Bill Conti, who famously scored the Rocky film, scores this movie, and it's like, dun-dun-dun-dun. I'm like so uninspired, man.
Yeah,
like,
well, this dude was... could you imagine? I mean, God. It's amazing. All they try to save money on everything, right? But they hire Bill Conti to do the score. Like they could have hired like some guy right out of like school to do.
Yeah,
you know.
Hey, man, that didn't hurt anybody. What's his name? Danny Elfman was brought on to score Pee-wee's Big Adventure, like his first like major film.
Well, yeah,
and that's like amazing. He goes on to do Batman.
Well,
and then,
I mean, Danny
know,
Elfman
kind of
though, I mean, he had a career though. You know, I mean, he was in Oingo
Boingo.
Well,
he was
Boingo,
like a musician.
And, yeah, he was in Oingo Boingo.
Yeah,
and you know, so he just started doing the movies to do it, and then yeah. You know, did that little Batman theme and. Kind of
yeah, and then
legendary.
Boom.
Yeah, I mean, he was Tim Burton's guy there, so he got that affiliation, and he's great at it, obviously. So
yeah, there's a couple of guys that did that, like Junkie XL, some of them.
Yeah, there's a guy, I think his name is Jeff Russo, the guy who does the music for Star Trek Discovery. He was in a band, and may still be, called Tonic, which was like an alternative band in the late '90s, kind of early 2000s. So yeah, it's. You know, listen, you got to make money, right? If you're a professional musician.
Yeah.
And that's a great way to do it.
Yeah. It's really good stuff. Yep. Anyways, we're kind of like all over the place.
So there you go. So we just gave Tavo a little bit of film score. We try to sprinkle in. So rather than do one episode about film scores, we've sprinkled them in over the course of our 56 episodes.
That's so
here
funny.
And there.
Yeah, but anyways, kicking it out to you guys, the listeners, let us know via Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, like, let us know what you guys think of Masters of the Universe. Have you seen it? Does it have a very special and warm place in your heart? Does the music stand out to you? Let us know what you think. We can keep that conversation going offline.
Sure, and let us know, is it something that you want to see today?
Yeah.
You know, and do you think that it'll resonate with modern audiences?
Yeah, I would love to hear what people think of that, because I'm actually moving way into the camp of like I just think the concept of it is done.
Right.
I don't think it belongs in the like Percy Jackson in the like Seven Waves of Odin. I don't know what the like I don't know what those movies are, but like that's where I feel like it belongs, with these like tweeny type kids who've read these books and are like, oh my God, I can't wait to see the next Percy Jackson film. Like, that's where I think it
sure.
belongs.
Also, give us your thoughts on Percy Jackson and the Seven Waves of Odin.
It was like some of the Seven Waves of, like, what's his name? Who's the god of water? Triton?
Sure.
Oh, what? Yeah, whatever.
Let's go on to the next thing.
Aquaman's dad.
Matt Reeves, the Batman, has a cinematographer now.
Yeah, man, that shook the world up.
Yeah, it sure did. And his name's Greg Fraser, and he was a cinematographer on Rogue One, a movie that I loved.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes, it is. And he also worked with Matt Reeves before on Let Me In, which is, you know, Let Me In was one of those examples of an unnecessary American remake of a really good movie that actually works.
Yes. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
The kid is creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Like the other kid. And then it's what's her name? Chloe Grace Moretz, right?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah.
Hit Girl. For those of you who don't know who I just mentioned.
He also worked on Zero Dark Thirty, Vice, Foxcatcher. He was nominated for an Oscar for Lion. So this is it's a big-time cinematographer. The look of this film, and you know, like any Batman film, I think the look is something that people get really curious about, and I think that's why this news was bigger than your typical like cinematographer announcement. Everyone's curious of what the look of this film is going to be like. And now, obviously, this is a guy based on his resume. Doesn't necessarily tell you anything because it's kind of all over the place. Other than the fact that his movies look good, which is the most important thing.
Right.
But everyone always wants to know what is the look of this of Batman going to be, because visually, the movies have been all over the place when it comes to Batman.
Right.
But there's always been a style to them, right? So, you know, what Tim Burton you know, the look of Tim Burton's Batman 89 and Batman Returns, you know, has a very distinct look. And then it shifted a bit for Batman Forever and then Batman and Robin. And then, obviously, what Nolan's films did was more realistic.
Like Wally Pfister, who is his cinematographer. So if you look at, I was just about to bring it up too, because Wally Pfister to me is such a well-known cinematographer because I follow a lot of Nolan's films and they just have a look and feel. There's a familiarity to it. Even though they're all different and the story's all different, Wally Pfister had worked on, you know, films like The Prestige and The Dark Knight and, you know, Insomnia and The Dark Knight Rises, and those all kind of have a look and feel that is sort of, you know, emblematic of what his work is. So I like Wally Pfister, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
we'll have some idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Of what the Batman will look like.
So so that was big.
Yeah.
And speaking of Batman and nostalgia, kind of, I did see a couple of animated Batman movies in the past week. I had a chance to watch Batman meets the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
How was that?
Which was a lot of fun. I was a big fan of the comic series that it was based on. And it's good. It's fun. And I enjoyed that a lot, actually. And I also had a chance to watch Batman Hush, which came out early on digital. It actually came out on my birthday. Happy birthday to me. So I got to watch that. It doesn't come out on Blu-ray and 4K until August 6th, but it is available on digital now. And that I just was so disappointed in.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, Hush is a great storyline.
Yeah.
And I just did not like the direction that... It was going to be really difficult to compress that or to condense that into one, like, animated film. Because it is such an expansive storyline, and they just didn't do a good job of it. Ultimately, having to do a condensed version of a story like that just didn't work. And the stuff that they chose to focus on for me was not nearly as interesting. And the main character, I feel like, almost gets, or the main villain anyway, gets shorted in this. So I was disappointed in that. I was really, really looking forward to that. And but Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was that's fun. So I definitely enjoyed
that. I'll have to check that out when they all come to DC Universe.
Yeah.
I know you're buying that. It's funny because the one thing I was catching up on, I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm like a big like makeup and effects guy. I like, you know, the making of suits and puppetry and all that stuff. Like, I used to watch Face Off on Sci-Fi religiously. One of the things I caught that was on DC, I think it's DC Now. Is that the service where they like kind of do like news announcements?
Oh,
whatever. Was the restoration of the Batman 89 suit for the DC Archives. Which is really cool. They hire a company to basically recreate the suits, and because the foam latex is deteriorating, like sunlight just basically kills it. So the suits have been falling apart. You know, obviously it's been 30 years, so it's interesting to see how they bring it all back to life. They do some like 3D scanning of the suit. And then kind of fill in, re-sculpt parts of it digitally so that they can then like print out or like remold some of the parts of the suit. And then in terms of bringing it back to life, they actually used some of the deteriorated pieces as it starts to turn into dust, and they reincorporate it back into some of the sculpting material. So it was a fascinating, it's like a 5.5 minute featurette on YouTube. It was really cool to see how they were bringing it back to life, and it looked amazing. It looked fresh. So I would totally recommend you guys check that stuff out if you're into that.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So movie trailers, there was like one.
Sure.
that caught my attention, and that was Zombieland Double Tap. Chris, you watched it. What'd you think?
I did watch it. It did nothing for me. I like the first Zombieland, although when I saw it in theaters, and I realized I really have not seen it much since then. Right. So I'm not sure how the movie has aged for me, because I haven't really rewatched it. But I liked it. This trailer just didn't do much for me. I don't know. I'm not really excited for the movie. It's just not really on my radar.
You know, the funny thing is, like, when it was announced, I was, like, super excited about it. And then I saw it, and it was funny because the first movie caught me off guard. I didn't think I was going to like it as much because the kind of, like, zombie motif thing had been – it's, like, overdone. And then – but to see it kind of turn into a comedy and all of that, I thought it was really cool, and the casting was perfect. I'm not really getting good vibes off of this one. It just kind of feels like more of the same, and you know, but I'm with you. I wasn't really excited for it. Yeah. So I was like, cool. All right. Yeah. They're in the White House. Awesome. Great.
Sure.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Anyways,
I watched a couple of shows, this week as well. I watched the first episode.
Not Stranger Things, though.
No, not Stranger Things. That is so. My goal. Well, I'll get into my goals in a bit. But, I watched the first episode of Pennyworth, which is the new Epic series,
yes,
based on young Alfred Pennyworth, and I liked it. I'm definitely the first three episodes are available on, the Epic streaming service if you subscribe. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to eventually watch the next two at some point in the next couple of days. It's got a style to it. Mm. It's very 60s like England. So the music and the look is very much like that. But what I really liked about it was the fact that it's not, well, at least so far, excuse me, it's not like genuflecting at the altar of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going out of its way to throw in a Batman Easter egg every 5 seconds.
Right, like Gotham?
Well, like Gotham eventually became, you know. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe this will get to that point. I don't think so, though. Just would be really, really forced. I mean, Thomas Wayne exists, and he's in it, but just because he kind of has to be, right?
Right.
But they haven't really, the where it's set and everything doesn't really lend itself, because it's not set in Gotham City. So mm-hmm. to try to get into all that origin stuff. So that's one thing I really did like about it. And it was just one episode. It's really hard to judge because, it's a slower episode. Pilot. It's a pilot. It's kind of setting everything up. But I definitely liked it. And I also watched the first three episodes of The Boys. Amazon Prime show based on the classic comic series from Garth Ennis, who's my favorite comic book writer of all time, and Derek Robertson. Mm. And I loved that.
Yeah, it looks really, really intriguing. I've been catching the trailers for it, and Carl Urban, right, is leading the pack there, which I love. But I gotta dig into it because I know nothing of it. But it, it's like set in the world of superheroes, which I always love stories that take place like that. So.
Well, yeah. So The Boys is just basically.
But tell me about it.
The Boys, basically, the general premise is that there are superheroes that exist, but they work for a corporation. And basically, they're just like greedy. They're just awful people. So there's a group of non-superhumans who sort of band together. They're kind of like anti-heroes because they're not exactly not all of them anyway, are like the best people in the world either, but they band together to basically, for their own different motivations, fight or try to get at these superheroes. Mm. So it's really flipping the superhero concept kind of on its ear. What I like about the show is that so far, at least in the first three episodes, there are some real things that they've taken right out of the comic. And then there's some stuff that they've kind of changed a little bit just because for TV purposes, which is fine. But it's still very much Garth Ennis. Like, it's still violent. It's still, like, sexual and edgy and just over the top. but, you know, in a way that I think is a little bit more palatable for TV than his, you know, his books are like the characters jump off the pages of everything that he writes, and they're so vivid and so amazing. But, you know, for TV, you got to kind of pull some of that in. And then I think it's achieved a really good balance of reining in some of the stuff, but also still letting it be very much what it is, true to its kind of source material and the feel. So I'm looking forward to finishing. There's 8 episodes in the first season. It's already been renewed for a second season. So my goals for this week are to finish that season, to watch the next couple of episodes of Pennyworth, and to finally get to Stranger Things season 3, which I've regretfully neglected to this point. It came out at like the worst possible time for me, because I just didn't have a lot of time. And I know that it's not something I want to watch like a couple of episodes here and there. I'm going to want to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, have to go through it.
Yeah, so and thankfully I've avoided spoilers or anything, which is great. So definitely going to finish that, or start it and finish it at some point this week.
It's good. It's a short run, but it's worth it. It's totally good. I love condensed TV programming, like streaming stuff, because then you can just, you know, in the if you want to kill it off in a day, you can. If you want to spread it out a little bit, in 2 episodes here, 2 episodes there, it's also good. And then you kind of wrap it up, and then there's like that, oh my god, it's over, what else are we gonna watch? But I really enjoy the condensed series runs. I like those. It was really good. But see, I haven't been watching any TV. I got to catch up on Swamp Thing. Haven't touched that. Been like 3 weeks. And I think it's over. But I've been watching old school kung fu flicks, man.
Yes. You mentioned earlier.
Clan of the White Lotus. Shaolin versus the Wu-Tang. Shaolin versus Lama. Dude, I'm just... I don't know what kind of kick I'm on, but I'm just gobbling all that stuff up. A lot of the old school Gordon Liu stuff, who, interestingly enough, there's a character that pops up occasionally in these films, but he's prominent in the Clan of the White Lotus, and his name is Pai Mei, and he pops up in Kill Bill. And Gordon Liu, of all people, plays Pai Mei in Kill Bill Volume 2, so... piece of trivia for all you guys out there, but that's just a dope character. But yeah, man, I've just been eating all that stuff up, and as I was growing up, I was a big fan of Wu-Tang Clan, and so I love hearing some of those little snippets that they pulled from these films and incorporated it into their albums. But those are great films. So if anyone wants to talk shop with me about some of these old school Shaolin, Kung Fu, Wu-Tang films, like, get at me. I can talk for days about it because it's awesome.
As could I.
Belabor our show with that crap.
We'll do a Shaw Brothers episode.
Which, you know what? Going back to Quentin Tarantino, I love the fact that he pulled some of that stuff into the Kill Bill film.
Well,
you know, the opening and...
Yeah, I mean, he grew up going to like exploitation movies in Times Square. I mean, that's essentially where he developed his love of movies. And like, he's a huge Sonny Chiba fan.
Right.
You know, so like, that's like right in his wheelhouse. And he's always thrown elements of that into, well, not all of his movies, but the ones where it fit anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Kill Bill was essentially just an homage to all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good stuff.
Even down to the, you know, the jumpsuit that she wears. That's a sort of an homage tribute to Game of Death, to Bruce Lee's outfit in Game of Death. You know.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Again, I just talked about Pai Mei. That's another throwback to some of those old school kung fu flicks. Mm-hmm. You know, the white eyebrows and the long white beard, stuff like that. I just thought, that stuff is just dope. I love all that stuff. That's why Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 are like my favorite Tarantino films.
I'm with you. I love those movies.
I mean, I like, if I'm in a mood, I'm just like, I gotta watch these films. I just can't stop watching them.
Of all of his movies, and he's, you know, I like most of his movies. Yeah. Those are the ones I rewatch regularly.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Same. it just brings me back. I mean, that's how growing up, Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings was all about, like, Abbott and Costello, wrestling, and then the old, like, kung fu movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would just watch from the minute I woke up. Well, after cartoons, of course. From, you know, the minute that the cartoons ended until it was time to stop watching TV or turn on, like, a game or whatever would come on after that.
So we did get a question.
Yes.
From our listener, our devout listener, JRB. And his question was, what's the worst ending to a good movie and how would you change it? So I haven't even thought about this, so Chris, I'm going to throw it at you.
Yeah, this is a great question. And I probably need to think a lot more about this, but I mean, there have been some really bad endings in movies, but they just weren't attached to particularly good movies. So that doesn't really, like a lot of the M. Night Shyamalan stuff, when it got like really bad, but I wouldn't say like those were like The Happening and The Village are not necessarily good movies. So the fact that their endings are awful doesn't work for this question.
I think The Village gets a bad rap, by the way.
Okay. So then maybe that could be one of your choices.
No. I got a couple of films I got to think about.
That. I mean, one that jumps out at me, because he said, how would you change it? And this is one that I would have always changed, is The Mist. So The Mist is a movie that I really love. It's based on a Stephen King story. And the movie's really good. And then the ending actually, it's one of those cases where they actually change the ending from the original story. They do the opposite of the Hollywood ending. So we're going to get into spoilers here, I guess, technically. So if you don't want to know the ending of The Mist, just stop listening to this part. But at the end of the actual, like, story, they just kind of drive off, right? Into the, not the sunset, but, like, into the mist as the, you know, the government comes in and starts clearing out all the mayhem. But at the end of the movie, they change the ending to where they basically all essentially like commit suicide because they figure there's no way out. And as like 2 seconds after, like basically the guy watches, like, you know, has to, like, his son's dead, like his whole, everyone's dead. The government comes in and starts clearing out the wreckage. And it's like, it leaves this like tragic ending for like Thomas Jane's character. And that never worked for me. It's one of those, like, oh, you actually should have stuck with the original ending. It worked better. You know, because it's like everything that they go through for that. And I guess they were going for that, like, shock effect. They were almost going for, like, the Night of the Living Dead ending where, like, at the end of the original Night of the Living Dead, you know, the Ben character who fights off everybody and is the hero, the story, gets shot and killed. You know, which is a social commentary more so than anything else. But it's like, oh, really? So, like, it's one of those endings. And that's one that I would have changed. I would have just gone with the original ending of the story where they just ride off and as the government's clearing it all out. Because I think the story's been told to that point. Yeah. So what do you got?
Gosh. I was like thinking of a couple of movies. The one that, I don't know, this is like trivial. I mean, it's not based on anything like a book or anything like that. So I don't really know how it would have ended if, I'll tell you how I think I would have ended it. I thought The Matrix Reloaded was a great movie until like the last, the last couple of moments where they were trying to tie it into another film. I enjoyed the fight scenes. I thought it was like cool about the key, you know, the key maker and like, you know, things, you know, kind of getting, the things were kind of set in stone and that this had happened before in the past and all the other stuff. Like, I thought that was a really cool concept, but then this whole thing about him jumping into bodies and like feeling the machines and all of that stuff, like that was just odd to me. And I thought, okay, if you just done something different with Neo still being super powerful, I thought that would have been fair enough, and we would have gotten a little different film in Revolutions. But then they went into this whole thing about him having to go to the source, and that's what killed the whole thing for me at the end. That's just one movie. The other one is Annihilation. Have you seen Annihilation?
No. I've heard about this ending, though.
Yeah. So it gets real trippy at the end. Like, the whole third act needed a rewrite. It was an interesting thing about this UFO sphere thing. Like, I don't know, it kind of looked like a big bubble. Evolving things that were inside of it at a rapid rate. And so, like, one person becomes plants. Like, one person becomes, like, something else. Like, the people are evolving as they're in this, like, thing. And then the third act, it's like, she finds the source of this meteor, which is the thing that creates the sphere. And then it's like some metal person that just takes on, like, someone was smoking some really, really good stuff and was like, yo, how about they meet an alien, like, and it's like the T-100 or T-1000, and it's metal, and it just takes on the likeness of a human being, and then it becomes a mirror, and then they start, like, it's so weird.
Yeah,
because she tries to get out of this room, and the thing is blocking her because it's doing exactly what she's doing. I don't know what I was watching it on a plane, and I literally, like, I was rolling my eyes so hard I almost passed out. it's just really weird. I don't know if anyone who's listening has seen Annihilation. If you guys love it, tell me about it, because I didn't really get it, other than the fact that her and this creature evolved into something. Yeah. But it, like, for the most part, I was into it.
Right.
I was like, oh man, it's really cool. Yeah. It's different. You know, different, like, it's interesting
because I'm thinking more and more about it. And it's like I said earlier, like, most of the movies where the endings were like ones that I was like, what? They just weren't particularly good movies.
Yeah.
So it's hard to think of, like, a movie that I really, really like. Because I don't know. It's tough. I'd like to hear everyone's feedback, though, on this. So
yeah,
this is definitely a conversation we want to have you guys join in on. Give us your thoughts on some movies that you really liked that had awful endings. And just kind of see where, like, everybody is. I guess it's a matter of opinion as far as, like, the movie itself, right? So there might be some movies that people actually liked that I didn't, where, you know, they had bad endings. So that's why it's a little tough, but
I don't know. I mean, like, there are controversial endings, right? Like Inception.
Right. So that's the other one I was thinking of. Like, I don't know where a lot of people fence with Inception.
Yeah, like, and I didn't, like, the thing is, about Inception, that's just an amazing, like, to me, that's one of my all-time favorite films. Like, it's just totally in my top five.
Okay.
And the ending of that movie is what makes it part of the top five, because I know it rubbed people the wrong way, and I just thought it was, like, a great way to just go, like, you make it up. You know, it's like your story. You tell me, does it fall, does it not fall? So I was cool with that.
Yeah.
I know. A lot of people were pissed, though.
I mean, there's a lot of ways. It is an interesting conversation, because you could also take it the other way, right? Whereas, like, were there movies where the ending of the movie actually elevated the movie?
And yeah.
Made it better. Like a movie like The Usual Suspects for me,
that
ending just takes that movie into, like, a whole nother stratosphere for me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, like, you can go multiple ways with this. You look at it a lot of different ways. Endings are obviously really important. And in some ways can make or break a movie for you. So,
yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Last thing, I know we're kind of coming up on time here. The last thing, we didn't even talk about this in the first part of the show, which we should have, is Hobbs and Shaw drops this weekend.
Yes, it does.
And we didn't talk about anything about that.
No.
And,
well, we've
and we
been
were teasing
talking
about
it.
How yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about it. And we're going to save it for the end of the show, I guess. So,
sure.
Dude.
So yeah, I mean, look, I've said it plenty of times on the show. This movie I could not wait for. At the time that you hear this, the reviews will have been out.
Right.
But as the time that we're recording this, they have not come out yet.
We
but
know nothing.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care. This is one of those movies that's going to be review proof for me. I don't care what the reviews are. I don't necessarily expect them to be particularly great. And I don't, it's, that's just not why I'm going to see this movie. I'm not going to see this movie expecting it to win an Oscar. I'm going to see this movie because I want it to be big and loud and goofy and over the top and just entertaining. I want to leave my brain at the door for a little while. And I already have my tickets. And I,
oh, you do?
I
Me
am
too.
Very, very excited for this movie. Yeah, I'm pumped for it.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm stoked. I mean, I don't have my tickets. And here's the thing. Dwayne Johnson, hype man for any movie that he's involved with. I mean, the dude's been on the in the media circuit, really talking about this movie. And he gets me excited for it, man. I mean, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to check it out for sure. It's dope. You know, they showed some behind-the-scenes footage of him and Roman Reigns kind of doing their thing. And Roman throwing like a, I don't even know, it's a stick or tomahawk. I don't know what the hell it is. At a cameraman. Like he's supposed to fake it and he actually lets it go and
really?
He hits and knocks the teeth out of a cameraman.
Oh, that's.
Behind the scenes is pretty funny. But it got me thinking about Roman Reigns. Actually, so I'm going to spin this a little
bit.
That's
not where I thought this conversation was going
to
go.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm going to see this movie regardless, but to jump to another topic. So Roman Reigns, we've talked about this before on many of our wrestling episodes, but he's been like the force-fed, you know, character in the WWE. And it makes me wonder why Dwayne Johnson, now I know there's some sort of family connection there, like he's like a fourth cousin or something like that. Why he'd bring him into the fold, but like he is really propelling this dude. Like in some of the commentary and like what I was just talking about, the behind the scenes footage, he's really pushing this dude hard. And I almost wonder if he's like, dude, WWE isn't everything. Like here's another avenue for you to pursue. And I'm going to give you the keys to drive that car. Or is it like, hey, you're under the wing of Dwayne Johnson now. Like, you are going to become something else in WWE because you're still in that realm. And I don't know what it is. Something smelled a little fishy to me initially. So I could be, like, spinning stuff and making a whole bunch of BS up. But it just felt a little odd.
There's a connection. So they're not actually blood related.
Roman
Reigns'
like
father.
Family thing.
Yeah, like Roman Reigns' father is Sika of the Wild Samoans, the famous Afa and Sika tag team. And his family sort of took The Rock's maternal grandfather, who was Chief Peter Maivia, who was also a legendary wrestler. They kind of made him like a blood brother, which is like a. In the Samoan culture, like that's a so basically that makes him like family essentially. So Peter Maivia is The Rock's grandfather on his mother's side, so that's where that connection comes in. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, Roman Reigns is a guy that he has been force fed down everybody's throat, but there's a reason for that, right? It's because he's charismatic, he's good looking. You know, and they kind of see him in that realm. So, you know, he's a guy that I'm sure is one day going to look to maybe transition into the movies.
Right.
And I'm sure he's dropped that hint, probably.
Clearly.
Yeah, a few times. It probably at some family dinners. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And he plays The Rock's brother.
Yes.
Apparently. So like I'm interested to see that whole throwdown, man. That just looks like a crazy scene to
me. Yeah, the whole thing. I just, like I said, I
the whole thing just looks like, you know, balls
I don't,
of the wall.
Actually. I don't care what the reviews are. Like I have a weird or interesting history with the Fast and the Furious franchise because I was one of those people who, you know, I was not really into it like the first few movies when it was really kind of like a street racing thing.
Yeah.
And then as it became this over the top, sort of ridiculous
like heist films.
Action heist franchise or whatever, I started to like it more and more and became a big fan of it for what it is. I'm pumped. I don't care what the reviews are. It could do 6% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm still going to see it, and I'll still, well, I may or may not enjoy it, but I would hope to enjoy it. Movies like this, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for the same things that I would necessarily be looking at in other movies.
So what do you think? Do you think that this movie performs better than the other films in the roster?
I
know
don't.
It's not connected because it's like the Fast and Furious Presents.
Yeah, I don't know that it will. I think that, you know, without that, I mean, you never know. But I don't. Right. I don't think it will. You know, the last movie they've been, you know, $1 billion movies. There, I don't expect this to be a $1 billion movie.
Right.
I think that franchise was one that worked, especially overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the cars and the racing element was a big reason for that.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I expect it to do really well.
Yeah.
I don't see this as a $1 billion. Worldwide movie, although I mean you never know with The Rock these days, but yeah, I don't think
Jumanji.
It's expected to be.
Jumanji went.
No, I know.
Yeah, and I like. Sorry that we didn't talk about this trailer, but did you see the second trailer?
I did, and I liked the. I guess it's technically not the first Jumanji, right? The last Jumanji movie, the one with
right,
The Rock.
Right.
I liked that a lot, actually. I thought I would. I saw this one, and this one got me interested.
Yeah, so did I.
I like the trailer. It looks fun.
Yeah, Danny DeVito and Danny Glover.
Yeah, and I like what they did with the concept, like to change
me
it
too.
Up. Yeah.
I forgot what movie. It may have been, definitely it was because that's a Sony film. It was Far From Home when I
exactly.
saw it.
Yep.
And I was laughing my ass off. And I'm like, man, I actually haven't had this kind of reaction for a trailer in a little bit, so I'm excited for that. But anyways, anything else we want to tackle before we let everyone go?
Before we get out of here, are you a? I don't know where you fall. Now something tells me you weren't, but because I also wasn't. But were you a Dungeons and Dragons guy?
Like the card game?
I guess yeah. Is that where that was?
Oh, not the card game. I'm sorry, like the board game thing.
The thing that the kids play.
But the Stranger Kid. Thing no
yes exactly
clearly I didn't know what the hell we were talking about. Card game, board game, what
whatever
no.
Yeah, whatever you just so eloquently said.
No, because you know what happened in the 80s, right, when it was like a big thing? I remember people saying that it was like Satanism, like satanic thing.
Oh, really?
Or something like that.
Huh.
Do you remember this?
No.
Well, okay, maybe it was my parents speaking some craziness in my mind, but they were like, oh no, that's like, you know, it's like devil game, man. You can't play that. So I never touched it.
Got
so it. That was one of the reasons. No.
Well, anyway, sorry. The reason why I bring it up is because the news came out that Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly are in negotiations to direct the Dungeons and Dragons movie. After leaving the Flash movie over creative differences. So Paramount's trying to sign them to make that movie. And I guess Hasbro owns the rights to Dungeons and Dragons. So they have a deal. They're trying to get movies and stuff for some of their other properties.
Mm.
So we'll see. So.
Yeah. Huh. I gotta see who's writing this quickly, because I feel like one of my old buddies, Lindsay.
Who's
Beard,
writing
written
the movie?
Yeah.
No, they have it here in this in the story that Michael Giglio.
No, nope, don't know that
the script. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if that's. I mean, again, is that. I mean, they made Battleship.
Oh, they, yeah. I mean, listen, they've done tons of stuff. But again, this ties into your whole thing from before, right? Is Dungeons and Dragons something that resonates with,
I mean,
you know,
yeah.
Audiences.
I don't,
at least young audiences.
I
mean,
know,
obviously,
man.
You know, with Game of Thrones and stuff, that was, you know, even though it's very different and, you know, Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. I mean, is there room for, is that world something that people want are interested in 2019 or 2020.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I guess some parts of it, yes. I mean, look at the success of the Harry Potter franchise, right? Like,
right. That, although that was a book series that came out in modern times, though, and was enormous, though.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, who knows? Who knows if they spin it in the way of, like, the game route, like the Jumanji thing. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, there's been a couple of attempts at that. There was, like, what, Zathura? That Jon Favreau actually directed?
I enjoy that movie, actually.
Yeah, so do
I. It's an underrated movie.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a great, great example of another game. You know, yeah, board game. Like, game-like movie. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't know if these, like, fun. I mean, who knows if they're going to go fun. I say that because I'm thinking game, but they could go really serious with it, and yeah, it could be the next best thing. I mean, I was thoroughly disappointed by the Aragorn book series. I don't know if you ever read that.
No.
Yeah, it was like a dragon stories, like, you know, dragon riders and all that other stuff. It had Jeremy Irons and somebody else in it, and it was a crap movie. Totally changed it, like, things in the book didn't make any sense, but anyways, we'll see. Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, yeah,
there you go. All right.
Yeah,
so plenty of things to join in on that conversation. And you can do that, of course, by tweeting us at the Fanboy Garage. And, of course, also on our Facebook page, the Fanboy Garage page, we have our groups there where you can send us your thoughts on everything as well. And, of course, you can tweet us individually, myself, at RealCLMighty.
And you can tweet me at StartingSith. Please don't forget to check out our Instagram page as well, if that's your social media preference of choice. Always go to thefanboygarage.com where you can get the latest swag. Email us directly. And, you know, if you guys, again, want to continue conversations, you have any opposing or complimentary views, please throw them our way. And lastly, please give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It helps the show tremendously, and we'd always love your support. So thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
We're out.
Let's get out of
here. Close the door.